Chapter 101. Something right somewhere, to be in the halting state of Mr. Henry Gowan, to have left one of two powers in disgust, to want the necessary qualifications for finding promotion with another, and to be loitering moodily about on neutral ground, cursing both, is to be in a situation unwholesome for the mind, which time is not likely to improve. The worst class of some worked in the everyday world is ciphered by the diseased arithmeticians who are always in the rule of subtraction, as to the merits and successes of others, and never in addition, as to their own. The habit, too, of seeking some sort of recompense in the discontented boast of being disappointed, is a habit fraught with degeneracy. A certain idle carelessness and recklessness of consistency soon comes of it. To bring deserving things down by setting undeserving things up is one of its perverted delights, and there is no playing fast and loose with the truth, in any game, without growing the worse for it. In his expressed opinions of all performances, in the art of painting, that were completely destitute of merit, Gowan was the most liberal fellow on earth. He would declare such a man to have more power in his little finger, provided he had none, than such another had, provided he had much, in his whole mind and body. If the objection were taken, that the thing commended was trash, he would reply, on behalf of his art, "My good fellow, what do we all turn out but trash? I turn out nothing else, and I make you a present of the confession." Apostrophe, to make a vaunt of being poor was another of the incidents of his splenetic state, though this may have had the design in it of showing that he ought to be rich, just as he would publicly laud and decry the barnacles, lest it should be forgotten that he belonged to the family. Howbeit, these two subjects were very often on his lips, and he managed them so well that he might have praised himself by the month together, and not have made himself out half so important a man as he did by his light disparagement of his claims on anybody's consideration. Out of this same merry talk of his, it always soon came to be understood, wherever he and his wife went, that he had married against the wishes of his exalted relations, and had had much ado to prevail on them to countenance her. He never made the representation, on the contrary seemed to laugh the idea to scorn, but it did happen that, with all his pains to depreciate himself, he was always in the superior position. From the days of their honeymoon, Minnie Gowan felt sensible of being usually regarded as the wife of a man who had made a descent in marrying her, but whose chivalrous love for her had cancelled that inequality. To Venice they had been accompanied by Monsieur Blandois of Paris, and at Venice Monsieur Blandois of Paris was very much in the society of Gowan. When they had first met this gallant gentleman at Geneva, Gowan had been undecided whether to kick him or encourage him, and had remained for about 24 hours, so troubled to settle the point to his satisfaction, that he had thought of tossing up a 5-franc piece on the terms, tails, kick, heads, encourage, apostrophe and abiding by the voice of the oracle. It chanced, however, that his wife expressed a dislike to the engaging Blandois, and that the balance of feeling in the hotel was against him. Upon it, Gowan resolved to encourage him. Why this perversity, if it were not in a generous fit? Which it was not. Why should Gowan, very much the superior of Blandois of Paris, and very well able to pull that prepossessing gentleman to pieces and find out the stuff he was made of, take up with such a man? In the first place, he opposed the first separate wish he observed in his wife, because her father had paid his debts, and it was desirable to take an early opportunity of asserting his independence. In the second place, he opposed the prevalent feeling, because with many capacities of being otherwise, he was an ill-conditioned man. He found a pleasure in declaring that a courtier with the refined manners of Blandois ought to rise to the greatest distinction in any polished country. He found a pleasure in setting up Blandois as the type of elegance, and making him a satire upon others who piqued themselves on personal graces. He seriously protested that the bow of Blandois was perfect, that the address of Blandois was irresistible, and that the picturesque ease of Blandois would be cheaply purchased if it were not a gift, and unpurchasable, for 100,000 francs. That exaggeration in the manner of the man which has been noticed as appertaining to him, and to every such man, whatever his original breeding, as certainly as the sun belongs to this system, was acceptable to Gowan as a caricature, which he found it a humorous resource, to have at hand for the ridiculing of numbers of people who necessarily did more or less of what Blandois overdid. Thus he had taken up with him. And thus, negligently strengthening these inclinations with habit, and idly deriving some amusement from his talk, he had glided into a way of having him for a companion. This, though he supposed him to live by his wits at play tables and the like, though he suspected him to be a coward, while he himself was daring and courageous, though he thoroughly knew him to be disliked by many, and though he cared so little for him, after all, that if he had given her any tangible personal cause to regard him with aversion, he would have had no compunction whatever in flinging him out of the highest window in Venice into the deepest water of the city. Little Dorrit would have been glad to make her visit to Mrs. Gowan alone. But as Fanny, who had not yet recovered from her uncle's protest, though it was 24 hours of age, pressingly offered her company, the two sisters stepped together into one of the gondolas under Mr. Dorrit's window, and, with the courier in attendance, were taken in high state to Mrs. Gowan's lodging. In truth, their state was rather too high for the lodging, which was, as Fanny complained, fearfully out of the way, apostrophe, and which took them through a complexity of narrow streets of water, which the same lady disparaged as mere ditches. Apostrophe, the house, on a little desert island, looked as if it had broken away from somewhere else, and had floated by chance into its present anchorage in company with a vine almost as much in want of training as the poor wretches who were lying under its leaves. The features of the surrounding picture were a church with hoarding and scaffolding about it, which had been under supposititious repair so long that the means of repair looked 100 years old, and had themselves fallen into decay, a quantity of washed linen, spread to dry in the sun, a number of houses at odds with one another, and grotesquely out of the perpendicular, like rotten pre-Adamite cheeses cut into fantastic shapes and full of mites, and a feverish bewilderment of windows, with their lattice blinds all hanging askew, and something draggled and dirty dangling out of most of them. On the first floor of the house, was a bank, a surprising experience for any gentleman of commercial pursuits, bringing laws for all mankind from a British city where two spare clerks, like dried dragoons, in green velvet caps adorned with golden tassels, stood, bearded, behind a small counter in a small room, containing no other visible objects than an empty iron safe with the door open, a jug of water, and a papering of garland of roses, but who, on lawful requisition, by merely dipping their hands out of sight, could produce exhaustless mounds of 5-franc pieces. Below the bank, was a suite of 3 or 4 rooms with barred windows, which had the appearance of a jail for criminal rats. Above the bank, was Mrs. Gowan's residence. Notwithstanding that its walls were blotched, as if missionary maps were bursting out of them to impart geographical knowledge, notwithstanding that its weird furniture was forlornly faded and moldy, and that the prevailing Venetian odor of bilge water and an ebb tide on a weedy shore was very strong, the place was better within than it promised. The door was opened by a smiling man like a reformed assassin, a temporary servant who ushered them into the room where Mrs. Gowan sat, with the announcement that 2 beautiful English ladies were come to see the mistress. Mrs. Gowan, who was engaged in needlework, put her work aside in a covered basket, and rose, a little hurriedly. Miss Fanny was excessively courteous to her, and said the usual nothings with the skill of a veteran. Papa was extremely sorry, apostrophe proceeded Fanny, to be engaged today.
He is so much engaged here, our acquaintance being so wretchedly large.
semicolon, and particularly requested me to bring his card for Mr. Gowan, that I may be sure to acquit myself of a commission which he impressed upon me at least a dozen times. Allow me to relieve my conscience by placing it on the table at once. Apostrophe, which he did with veteran ease. We have been, apostrophe, said Fanny, charmed to understand that you know the Myrtles. We hope it may be another means of bringing us together. Apostrophe, they are friends, apostrophe, said Mrs. Gowan, of Mr. Gowan's family. I have not yet had the pleasure of a personal introduction to Mrs. Myrtle, but I suppose I shall be presented to her at Rome. Apostrophe, indeed? Apostrophe, apostrophe, returned Fanny, with an appearance of amiably quenching her own superiority. I think you'll like her. Apostrophe, you know her very well? Apostrophe, apostrophe, why, you see, apostrophe, said Fanny, with a frank action of her pretty shoulders, in London one knows everyone. We met her on our way here, and, to say the truth, Papa was at first rather cross with her for taking one of the rooms that our people had ordered for us. However, of course, that soon blew over, and we were all good friends again. Apostrophe, although the visit had as yet given little Dorrit no opportunity of conversing with Mrs. Gowan, there was a silent understanding between them, which did as well. She looked at Mrs. Gowan with keen and unabated interest. The sound of her voice was thrilling to her. Nothing that was near her, or about her, or at all concerned her, escaped little Dorrit. She was quicker to perceive the slightest matter here than in any other case but one. You have been quite well, apostrophe, she now said, since that night? Apostrophe, quite, my dear. And you? Apostrophe, oh. I am always well, apostrophe, said little Dorrit, timidly. Yes, thank you. Apostrophe, there was no reason for her faltering and breaking off, other than that Mrs. Gowan had touched her hand in speaking to her, and their looks had met. Something thoughtfully apprehensive in the large soft eyes had checked little Dorrit in an instant. You don't know that you are a favorite of my husband's, and that I am almost bound to be jealous of you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mrs. Gowan. Little Dorrit, blushing, shook her head. He will tell you, if he tells you what he tells me, that you are quieter and quicker of resource than anyone he ever saw. Apostrophe, he speaks far too well of me, apostrophe, said little Dorrit. I doubt that, but I don't at all doubt that I must tell him you are here. I should never be forgiven if I were to let you and Miss Dorrit go without doing so. May I? You can excuse the disorder and discomfort of a painter's studio? Apostrophe, apostrophe, the inquiries were addressed to Miss Fanny, who graciously replied that she would be beyond anything interested and enchanted. Mrs. Gowan went to a door, looked in beyond it, and came back. Do Henry the favor to come in, apostrophe, said she, I knew he would be pleased. Apostrophe, apostrophe, the first object that confronted little Dorrit, entering first, was Blandois of Paris in a great cloak and a furtive slouched hat, standing on a throne platform in a corner, as he had stood on the great Saint Bernard, when the warning arms seemed to be all pointing up at him. She recoiled from this figure, as it smiled at her. Don't be alarmed, apostrophe, said Gowan, coming from his easel behind the door. It's only Blandois. He is doing duty as a model today. I am making a study of him. It saves me money to turn him to some use. We poor painters have none to spare. Apostrophe, Blandois of Paris pulled off his slouched hat and saluted the ladies without coming out of his corner. 1,000 pardons. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said he. But the professor here is so inexorable with me that I am afraid to stir. Apostrophe, don't stir then, apostrophe, said Gowan coolly, as the sisters approached the easel. Let the ladies at least see the original of the daub, that they may know what it's meant for. There he stands, you see. A bravo waiting for his prey, a distinguished noble waiting to save his country, the common enemy waiting to do somebody a bad turn, an angelic messenger waiting to do somebody a good turn, whatever you think he looks most like. apostrophe apostrophe say, Professor Mayo, a poor gentleman waiting, to do homage to elegance and beauty, apostrophe remarked Blandois. Or say, Cativo Sagetto Mayo, apostrophe returned Gowan, touching the painted face with his brush in the part where the real face had moved, a murderer after the fact. Show that white hand of yours, Blandois. Put it outside the cloak. Keep it still. Apostrophe, Blandois's hand was unsteady, but he laughed, and that would naturally shake it. He was formerly in some scuffle with another murderer, or with a victim, you observe, apostrophe said Gowan, putting in the markings of the hand with a quick, impatient, unskillful touch, and these are the tokens of it. Outside the cloak, man. Corpo di San Marco, what are you thinking of? Apostrophe apostrophe, Blandois of Paris shook with a laugh again, so that his hand shook more. Now he raised it to twist his mustache, which had a damp appearance, and now he stood in the required position, with a little new swagger. His face was so directed in reference to the spot where little Dorrit stood by the easel, that throughout he looked at her. Once attracted by his peculiar eyes, she could not remove her own, and they had looked at each other all the time. She trembled now. Gowan, feeling it, and supposing her to be alarmed by the large dog beside him, whose head she caressed in her hand, and who had just uttered a low growl, glanced at her to say, he won't hurt you, Miss Dorrit. Apostrophe, I am not afraid of him, apostrophe she returned in the same breath. But will you look at him? Apostrophe apostrophe, in a moment Gowan had thrown down his brush, and seized the dog with both hands by the collar. Blandois, how can you be such a fool, as to provoke him? By heaven, and the other place too, he'll tear you to bits. Lie down. Lion, do you hear my voice, you rebel? The great dog, regardless of being half choked by his collar, was obdurately pulling with his dead weight against his master, resolved to get across the room. He had been crouching for a spring at the moment when his master caught him. Lion! Lion! Apostrophe he was up on his hind legs, and it was a wrestle between master and dog. Get back! Down, lion! Get out of his sight, Blandois! What devil have you conjured into the dog? Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.